Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Black Hawk, by Jay Allen, narrated by Jeffrey Kafer. Prologue. The galaxy. Unimaginably vast. Mankind inhabits a huge swath of this massive conglomeration of stars, an entire spiral arm explored and colonized eons ago. Humanity's origins are forgotten, its birthplace long a lost legend, buried in the endless depths of the past. Little is known of mankind's expansion into the stars, of how so many worlds were settled and tamed. There are vague histories, as much legendary as factual, of civilizations that rose and fell, leaders who achieved great glory and were remembered, and then mostly forgotten. Great fleets that clashed, deciding the fates of billions, armies that marched across worlds, cities destroyed and then rebuilt, humanity pushing out ever farther from its homeworld, settling 1,000 worlds before falling into a dark age. But now mankind's lost glories are forgotten, the independence and spirit of its early adventurers gone, replaced by terror, by slavery. For the empire that now reigns over those worlds of humanity knows only one way to rule. Fear. On 1,000 worlds, people live in terror, crushed by their masters at the slightest signs of disobedience. For a millennium, the emperors have ruled humanity with an iron fist, and everywhere men and women look up to the sky, they live under imperial control. Everywhere save the far stars. A remote sector, a star cluster separated from the rest of human space by the great emptiness of the void, the far stars are a difficult and dangerous journey from imperial space. It is to the mysterious natural phenomenon of the void that the people of the far stars owe their freedom from imperial rule. Into this untamed frontier a man fled. He had been a warrior, a soldier of great ability, the product of a select breeding program. But that time had passed, and it was a broken man who escaped to the frontier of humanity's dominion, haunted by a dark and terrible past. He left his old name behind, took a new one utterly anonymous, but not for long. For where he goes, violence and death follows, and soon his new name will spread throughout the far stars, a cry of hope to some, a bitter curse to others. Black Hawk. Chapter 1. West Hill. The Badlands. Northern Celtiboria. The bar was dusty, run down, a filthy shack. It sat on the edge of a town boasting no more than a few dozen buildings, most as ramshackle as the tavern itself. The walls were dark and grime-covered, and the floor was built from coarse boards, old and stained with spilled liquor and more than a little blood. It was a place soldiers went, to get drunk, to gamble, and sometimes to get into fights, mostly non-lethal brawls fought with fists and bar stools instead of assault rifles and artillery. There were about 2 dozen people milling around, wearing a variety of mostly worn and filthy uniforms, sitting at the bar or at one of the half-dozen broken-down tables scattered around the room. Most of them were busy drinking or playing poker. Gambling was always popular with the soldiers, and many of them rushed to find a game just as soon as their paymasters handed out the nearly worthless scrip for their habitually overdue pay. There was a rickety stair in the back corner, leading up to a second floor with a half-dozen small rooms, where the saloon provided the other service soldiers with pay in their pockets tended to seek. A private was stumbling down the stairs, trying unsuccessfully in his drunken state to fasten his pants with one hand, as the other gripped the loose and wobbling rail. West Hill wasn't much as towns go, but it was the biggest settlement in the Badlands, and the only significant population center within 10 days' march in any direction. The scrubby desert had little more than sagebrush and a few meager farms clustered around the river, nothing of significant value. Save that it was a crossroads of sorts, laying between the rich ports of the White Rock coast and the fertile plains and the river cities farther inland. A dozen trade routes passed through its desolate landscape, the motor caravans carrying all manner of goods to waiting markets. And that made it worth fighting over. The armies of four warlords were nearby, men of war who had struggled for this scrap of arid, rocky plain, and the power over regional commerce it would provide its owner. The soldiers were mostly huddled in their armed camps now, licking their wounds after more than a year of nearly constant combat. They had fought themselves to exhaustion, and worn, tired, and low on supplies, the respective commanders had agreed to a truce. No one expected it to last very long. Ceasefires on Celtiboria seldom did, but for now the guns were silent. At least, mostly silent. With almost 100,000 grim veterans in the area, there was no such thing as perfect peace, and men were still dying, just at a slower pace.
"Give me the bottle."
The man tossed a coin down on the bar. It was an imperial copper, worth 20 times its weight in any of the debased and almost valueless Celtiborian currencies, and an almost obscene price to pay for the bottle of throat-scarring rotgut the bartender dropped in front of him. But the man didn't care. The money was ill-gotten, so it only seemed right to him it should be ill-used as well. Besides, it was worth it to him if the bottle got him drunk. A glass at a time wasn't accomplishing anything, so he figured it was time to escalate things.
"Sorry, buddy, but I can only give you the set exchange rate on that."
The bartender stood, staring down at the coin with poorly disguised greed. Imperial currency was accepted everywhere in the Far Stars, with far greater enthusiasm than the various local coins and scrips. But most of the world's established official exchange rates that owed more to fantasy than reality. And on Celtiboria, fractured and perpetually mired in civil war, each warlord enforced his own valuation, generally with even greater avarice and wishful thinking than the central banks of the other worlds. The man knew the bartender was full of shit. There wasn't an establishment on Celtiboria that wouldn't happily give 3 times the official rate, regardless of local laws and regulations. But he didn't care. The barkeep had to earn his way, and if cheating his customers was the only way he could do it, so be it. He'd have even found it amusing, if he'd had time for anything beyond misery and the temporary relief offered by extreme drunkenness.
"It's all right, just keep the change, and keep this will coming until I'm under the stool instead of sitting on it."
The man wasn't really drunk, not yet, at least. The slurred words were more wishful thinking than real impairment. Getting drunk was a challenge for him, something that took a lot of effort, and one hell of a lot of booze. He grabbed the bottle and filled his glass right to the top. Then he picked it up and drank it down in one slug. It was shit, some kind of bathtub brew that burned like battery acid going down. But right now he'd have guzzled steroid piss if it would dull the pain. Erase the memories, even for a few hours. But that was easier said than done. He wasn't a normal man, born with a random assortment of his parents' traits, with memories of old Aunt Jenny telling him how they had the same eyes. No, his genetics were far more complicated, the product as much of manipulation in a lab as whatever DNA he got from his mother and father, whoever they had been. Many people would have considered his genes a gift. They made him stronger, faster, smarter, more capable than pretty much anyone else he'd ever encountered. But they also made it damned difficult to get drunk, and most of the time that was all he cared about. He realized people would consider him ungrateful for the capabilities he so despised, but he didn't see things that way. He was doing his best to throw away his talents, and he radiated contempt for the things he could achieve if he chose to. Indeed, he was far too aware of just what he could do, the terrible uses to which he'd put his capabilities in the past. And it was that more than anything that made him want to crawl into the bottle. He wanted to be left alone, and usually that's what he got. Most of all, he hated his hypercharged digestive and immune systems, and the efficiency with which they purged poisons like alcohol from his system almost as speedily as he could imbibe them. A group of soldiers walked through the door, their green and black uniforms identifying them as General Ghana's men. Bako Ghana was one of the strongest warlords in the area, and he'd been expected to chase the others out of the Badlands in a single campaign season. But the rival warlord Lucerne had gotten the better of him, beating his forces in the field 3 times and taking West Hill away from him. The truce that followed gave the soldiers of all sides access to the town, as long as they didn't bring anything heavier than sidearms with them. The word was Lucerne didn't like it, but even in victory his forces had been worn down, and he needed time to rest and resupply them. Giving his rival soldiers access to the only place in the Badlands they could get their fill of booze and women didn't seem like too much of a price to pay for the break in the fighting. The new arrivals carried themselves not with the demeanor of an army that had been thrice defeated and chased halfway across the Badlands, but rather a swagger that suggested their side had gotten the better of the fighting, that West Hill was their town, and not just some place they were allowed to come lightly armed to do their drinking and whoring. The man would have quickly seen through the pretense, realized the soldiers were overcompensating, covering for their bruised morale. That is if he'd noticed them at all, which he didn't. Apathy had become his religion, and he was deep in prayer, with no interest in anything save the bottle in front of him.
"Barkeep, 4 whiskies, and be quick about it!"
The soldier's voice was coarse. He and his comrades sat down at the bar, the speaker at the end of the group right next to the man. The 4 of them were puffing on foul-smelling cigars, cheap ones, the man realized, as the noxious smoke wafted in his direction. The soldier next to him reached out and grabbed his drink as the bartender set it down.
"Another,"
he barked, as soon as he'd tossed it back and set the glass down. Then he turned his head and stared at the man.
"So what the hell do we have here?"
he asked, the disrespect unmistakable in his tone.
"Some homeless wanderer in off the scrub?"
He paused, his gaze locked on the man. He made a face.
"You stink, you know that? You reek like the trail."
He paused, turning back and downing the drink the bartender had just poured for him.
"You got any scrip on you? 'Cause one of them fine women upstairs will give you the bath you need for half a ducat. You might even enjoy it."
He laughed at his own insult, followed immediately by his 3 friends. They all looked over at the man, waiting to see if their target had the guts to stand up to 4 of the great Ghana's soldiers. But the man didn't react, didn't respond at all. He'd seen his share of soldiers, killers with frozen blood who would make these Celtiborian bullies piss themselves with a stare. And from the stench drifting his way, the loudmouth needed to bathe even more than he did.
"What are you, deaf? I'm talking to you, boy!"
The man remained silent. He stared straight ahead as he grabbed the bottle and filled his glass again. He wasn't there to fight, or even to socialize. He was there to drink himself into unconsciousness. The soldier's face turned red, and he looked back at his companions.
"This drifter thinks he's too good to talk to us, boys."
He stared back at the man.
"You don't look like much, though, does he?"
The man turned toward the soldier, staring with cold gray eyes. "I'm not looking for trouble, soldier. Now drink your drink, move the fuck along, and keep your shit to yourself. I'm only gonna say it once." His voice was icy. He held his gaze for a few seconds, eyes fixed on the soldier and his friends. He was fighting to stay calm, to beat back urges from the past, dark ones, to try to ignore the soldiers, not to take the bait. But the normal involuntary response stirred in his mind, and he analyzed each of them, coldly assessing the threat they represented, and deciding it was minimal. If it came to fighting, he didn't doubt he would prevail. But wasting 4 troopers would draw a lot of unwanted attention. So he turned back to his drink and put it to his lips, downing it in 1 quick gulp before he put the glass on the bar and filled it again. The soldier hesitated. There was something in the man's stare, the frozen sound in his words, something unsettling, threatening. He hesitated, but then he looked back at his friends, saw the chuckles forming on their lips, waiting for him to back down. Finally, he turned back toward the man.
"Hey, boys, we got ourselves a real tough guy here."
There was a nervousness in his voice, but he pressed on anyway.
"You know what, shithead? You picked the wrong guys to fuck with. You hear me?"
His voice was thick with false bravado, but there was an uneasiness there, too. Even fear. The soldier took a cigar and put it out in the man's glass, the lit end hissing as it was extinguished by the low-proof, watered-down whiskey.
"What about that tough guy?"
The soldier laughed, flashing another glance back to his comrades, clearly expecting his target to back down. But the man just sat still for a few seconds, silent, unmoving. Then his arm whipped up, striking out in a motion so quick it was just a blur. The soldier stood still, looking straight ahead, his eyes transfixed. Then he fell to the ground, his hands grasping desperately at his crushed throat as he gasped for air. The man was on his feet now, his eyes fixed on the three other soldiers. He was dressed all in black, though the dust from the trail had covered him with a light gray coating. His hair was dark brown, long, pulled back in a ponytail held by a small silver clasp, the only thing of apparent value on his person. "Now get the hell out of here," he said, "and take this piece of shit with you." His voice was ominous, the threat of death heavy in every word. The soldiers were stunned. They had jumped to their feet and they stood staring at the man, then at their friend lying at his feet, still in the final stages of his death struggle. The bar was silent, every conversation hushed. Those closest to the door had run out into the street in search of relative safety, or one of General Lucerne's patrols. The others shied away, moving back against the walls, watching nervously as the scene unfolded. "Go," the man said. "Walk away. Live." The soldiers glanced back and forth for a few seconds. They were clearly scared, but in the end their rage won out. Almost as one, they reached for the pistols at their sides. They were combat veterans, men who had killed before. They moved rapidly, decisively, but not quickly enough. The man's hand dropped down as well, faster. He gripped the well-worn pistol he wore and brought it to bear before his enemies had even gotten theirs free of their holsters. The heavy gun cracked once, twice, a third time in rapid succession, and the soldiers fell backward, a single red hole dead center on each of their foreheads. The man slipped the gun in its place, and he turned back to the bar. He looked down, pushing the glass with a cigar to the side. He grabbed the bottle and took a deep gulp. Then he reached into his pocket and pulled out another Imperial coin, tossing it on the bar. "Clean up the mess," he said with no detectable emotion. He turned and walked toward the door, carrying the half-empty bottle with him as he did. He'd gotten halfway to the exit when he heard the commotion in the street. He stopped just as a group of uniformed troops poured in, weapons drawn. "Hands in the air," the leader shouted. "Now!" His voice was tense, but the man could hear the control of a true veteran in the words, a real soldier, not like the bullies in uniform he just wasted. Through the layers of apathy and contempt, a small spark of respect flickered. "I don't want to hurt you." The man stood, unmoving, the still warm pistol hanging on one side and a bronze-colored short sword sheathed on the other. His eyes darted back and forth, assessing his opponents. There were seven of them, and he could tell immediately they were better soldiers than the four thugs he just killed. They all had weapons drawn and leveled at him. "This is the last warning you're going to get." The lead soldier, a lieutenant from his insignia, stared at the man, his eyes focused, ready. The man could see the soldier's hands, the whiteness in his fingers as he gripped his weapon tightly. He knew he could win the fight one-on-one, even 2 or 3 to 1, but these were good soldiers. He could see that clearly, and there was no way he could take them all down. Not before they killed him. He felt an urge to fight despite the odds. Death didn't seem like such a terrible option. Life was a burden anyway, a constant effort to keep moving, to push back the memories, the dark side of himself, usually with the help of a river of alcohol. "Yes," he thought, "die now. Die gun in hand in this filthy saloon in the middle of nowhere. A fitting end to a life so wasted, so ill-used." His hand tensed. He was ready to draw. But something stopped him, something deep inside, as it always did. The indomitable will, the refusal to yield to death. It had saved him many times, even when he hadn't wanted saving. And there it was again, hardwired into his psyche, the will to survive by any means necessary, any means at all. He cursed silently to himself, feeling the wave of anger at his inability to simply allow himself to die. But even as his mind railed against itself, he felt his arms moving outward, away from his weapons. He stared right back at the officer and simply nodded. The lieutenant jerked his head toward the man, a signal to his troopers. Two of them ran forward, grabbing the man, reaching down and removing his weapons belt. One of the soldiers handed the pistol and sword to another, and then he grabbed the man's arms and pulled them behind his back, attaching a set of shackles. He pushed the man forward.
Let's go. The man felt a wave of anger, an urge to strike, to kill the soldier who shoved him. He knew he could. The shackles wouldn't stop him. But it wasn't the time. So he moved his leg forward, walked slowly toward the door. He was testing his captors, expecting the soldier to push him harder, to take the bait his defiant shuffling pace offered. But the soldier didn't touch him. He just said calmly, "Let's move." The man stepped through the door and out into the dusty main street of the town. There was a sparse crowd gathered, looking on cautiously. Trouble at the saloon wasn't exactly an uncommon occurrence, and Lucerne kept a tight grip on events in West Hill. Most days his soldiers made arrests two or three times, but the majority of those were routine fights and other situations involving too much alcohol. They typically held the prisoners overnight, letting them dry out before releasing them. But this was something else entirely. It seemed different than most fights, even ones with fatal endings. It had been so lopsided, over so quickly it looked at first glance like an ambush, cold-blooded murder and not a real fight. The man walked slowly down the street, silently staring ahead. The soldiers led him toward a light transport vehicle, two of them running ahead and opening the rear hatch. The man just continued forward, his eyes darting around, taking constant assessments of the situation. He would go along quietly. No doubt these soldiers would believe whatever cell they locked him in would hold him. But the man thought otherwise. The soldiers were professionals, there was no doubt in his mind about that. But he was equally sure he could break out of whatever jail they put him in. They might be good soldiers, but they were utterly unprepared for someone, something like him. He could see the crowd growing larger, hear the background noise of the townspeople speaking to each other. His hearing was vastly superior to human norms, and he could understand much of what they were saying. Word was spreading that this drifter had killed four soldiers, Ghana's men. That was noteworthy enough as the start of a legend, the stranger who'd bested four adversaries, and all the more enticing because of who the victims were. The people of West Hill still resented the callous rule and atrocities they'd suffered when Ghana had controlled the town, and no one mourned for his dead soldiers. But the situation sparked another kind of gossip, and people were already whispering fearfully, wondering how General Ghana would react if the killing would endanger the fragile truce. He turned his head and took one quick look at the crowd. "They're really scared. Did I just restart the petty little war in this backwater?" He paused for a second. Then he decided he didn't give a shit. He looked up and stepped into the transport. Chapter 2. General Lucerne's Headquarters. The Badlands. Northern Celtiberia. The man sat on the cot. It was a hard metal platform, bolted to the stone wall and covered with a thin foam pad. There was nothing comfortable about the cell, but it was clean and orderly, more so than the man had expected. He'd seen far worse prisons. He'd sat quietly since they had brought him in the day before, watching, taking note of everything. The bars, the schedule of guards coming in, delivering meals, returning to retrieve the trays. He had a plan, a way to make his escape, one he had calculated offered a considerable chance at success. But he'd held off. There was something about these soldiers, a discipline, a professionalism he'd hardly expected to find in a warlord's army on Celtiberia. In truth, he was curious about the troops and about their commander, and he found being interested in anything to be a refreshing change from the crushing apathy that ruled his life. The man had served in armies before, forces with veteran soldiers trained to a sharp edge. But those troops had all had a malevolence he didn't see here. These soldiers were sharp, capable, and he had no doubt they could unleash a fearful fury on the battlefield. But the casual brutality he'd seen in his own service was nowhere in evidence. They were controlled, and that said something about the man in command. He was sure these troopers would enjoy the pleasures of a good sack when they took a city. He didn't think them immune to the customary callings of war. But there was a hint of morality at work in this force, one that had rarely been in evidence elsewhere where he had fought. He wanted to know more about the man who commanded this army, so he didn't try to escape. He waited to see what happened next. The air was musty, damp, a coldness coming from the walls despite the adequate heat pouring from the ceiling vent. Like most deserts, the Badlands could be brutally hot during the day,
and surprisingly cold at night. And it was early morning still, the heat from the blazing sun still hours from penetrating the depths of the huge stone building. Lucerne had taken an old castle as his headquarters, a massive fortification he suspected had once been built to protect the very trade routes the general and his adversaries battled over now. The man wondered about his host. He'd heard the name in his time on Celtiboria, but little else. Lucerne wasn't one of the top-tier warlords, he was fairly certain of that, but he'd heard good things about the general, both in terms of his military skill and his temperament, and he suspected total control over the Badlands' trade routes would propel him a long way toward the top of the hierarchy, doubling or tripling his resources in an instant. These soldiers are well-trained and led. If this Lucerne is able to build a larger army of this quality, he could shake up the power struggle for sure. The man couldn't help but analyze strategy and tactics. It was hardwired into his brain, and no matter how much effort he made to ignore such things, the response was almost automatic. Even with a conflict that didn't involve him, an insignificant struggle in the far stars, a fight in which he had no stake, no real interest. The man didn't know all that much about Celtiboria, only that it was the most populated world in the far stars, and that it had once been the most powerful as well, until the republic that governed it collapsed almost 3 centuries before, ruined by generations of corruption and incompetent leadership. The fall ushered in a period of protracted civil war that still showed no signs of ending. The planet was ruled now by dozens of warlords, local nobles who styled themselves as generals, and raised armies to fight an unending war for planetary hegemony. That struggle had seen its increases and decreases in intensity, but in 300 years none of the warlords had achieved the sought-after planetary rule, and while they continued to fight, the people suffered, the resources that should have supported Celtiboria's wealth squandered on hundreds of pointless battlefields. He'd thought the whole situation to be fitting. The Far Stars was a wild and untamed sector, overrun by pirates and mercenaries, half its worlds relegated to a kind of semi-modern squalor, while others were ruled by an eccentric variety of kings, oligarchies, and religious sects. And then there was Celtiboria, the greatest planet, mired in a centuries-long nightmare that made the bizarre happenings on the fringe worlds look sane by comparison. He heard a sound, and his head snapped up. His mind cleared itself, shook away any ponderings that might distract him. His eyes were bright, focused, despite the fact that he hadn't slept in over 2 days, and while he wasn't planning any action, his body tensed nevertheless, every muscle ready for battle. The cell door slid to the side, and an officer entered, with 2 guards in front of him and 4 behind. It was a good level of protection, but the man couldn't help but suppress a bitter laugh. He was sure the grim soldiers were confident in their ability to protect their leader, but he had already analyzed the movement of the forward guards and he'd cataloged their apparent weaknesses. They were poorly positioned, close enough to each other that he could take them both down with a single compound move. He figured his chance of disabling the 2 guards and killing the officer, if he so chose, was north of 90%. It was a lot less certain he could drop the other 4 before they took him down, probably right around 50-50. And of course he was in the middle of a military installation full of troops who would probably react badly to his killing 7 of their comrades. He wouldn't guess he had no chance at all of an outright escape under such circumstances, but it wasn't a particularly good one. Of course all of that only mattered if he was worried about his own survival. And in truth he was quite ambivalent about it. He didn't fear death, and some days he came close to craving it. Still, he always held back, chose tactics, even desperate battle over suicide. There was something inside him, some force that made the thought of giving up anathema. He might be tired of living, tormented by the things he'd done and seen, but he knew in his heart he was incapable to yielding, of accepting death willingly. Even allowing himself to be captured was but a tactic, one acceptable because of his confidence in his ability to escape. No. Whatever future lay ahead of him, he knew when he died it would be gun and sword in hand, fighting to the last. Besides, there was something different now, a feeling he hadn't experienced for years. He was intrigued. The officer, the expression on his face, he seemed different from the others. He had a greater presence. There was something in his eyes, a spark of some kind. and the man was curious to hear what this soldier had to say. The officer nodded, a generic greeting.
I'm not sure welcome is the appropriate word for
Sample complete. Ready to continue?